My buddy, welcome to a Wednesday edition Bulldog Hour. Kevin Rush alongside here as always until 3. CG will come up. Actually, Chris, we're 2:30 today, and we will go over some of your emails in transition, get the rest of them on Friday in the full hour at 3 o'clock. But CG will have the full 3 until 6 o'clock. The Giants will get started again with the pregame at 6:05, 6:45 as they wrap up the two-game set against the Padres. Giants hanging on to win last night, and the A's have already played and won a lot earlier today. I think they started that thing just after noon in St. Pete as A's beat Tampa Bay 6-2. So the A's trying to get back on target. It's been a tough couple of weeks since they had that big loss in the series 2 weekends ago at home. Nobody is going to catch the Astros barring injury, but the Astros have had a ton of injuries. Doesn't seem to matter anyway. Nobody's going to catch them in the West, and the A's now have to try to run down the Rangers and have to slide into one of those two wild card slots. That's the best hope you have. So we'll see how it plays out with the A's, and for the Giants, just trying to win games the best they can, and we'll see what they do trade deadline with guys like Bumgarner as we approach the end of the month. Also for us tomorrow, because the Giants have the day off at 5 o'clock, we'll be able to have on the mothership 9:40 game 6 of the Warriors and the Raptors, the last one ever, at least for the foreseeable time, at Oracle. I say this because it's not going to be Oracle Arena anymore, and as long as things are okay at Chase Center next year, or later this year, next season, there will not be another Warrior game. So we're just going to assume that they got to the end of the line, and it will be tomorrow night, and we'll see if they can force a Game 7 in Toronto. That would be Sunday. We'd have that at 4 o'clock after the Giants wrap up. Also want to mention, if you haven't heard, it's been on SportsCenter, all that stuff. Kevin Durant did have the Achilles surgery today in New York. We'll see when I talk to Daryl tomorrow, and certainly it's going to be a topic because a week from tomorrow is going to be the draft. And then free agency, of course, hits as we roll to the end of the month. We'll see whether the Warriors and Kevin decide to stay together. We're going to go over all those machinations tomorrow, so stay tuned for that, and it'll be a topic of conversation on the national network as well. Right now, I want to bring up our good friend Jackson Moore at BarkBoard.com. Get caught up on our weekly visit with our great friend about Fresno State. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Jackson. I want to start with an email before we talk any particulars about the updates, Wyant, all the guys that might be coming aboard, from our good friend Sergio in Reedley. Been a great friend for a number of years, and we have talked, you know this, Jackson, over and over again, and I was just talking to Andrew about it yesterday, about the attendance issues, and I'm particularly focusing on football now because I have mentioned in basketball that it does require a greater level of commitment. You have weekday games that are being played as late as 8 o'clock at night. But by and large, Jackson, as you and I have talked, and Pat brought this up, and he has really from the time that he arrived back here as a head coach in 97, that you're only asking your fan base 6 times a year to come out. And I have talked about over and over again the chip on the shoulder of this valley. I know it because I was born here. I've been here for 62 plus years. I've said it over and over again, my friend. It is not an inferiority complex. It's quite the contrary. It's a feeling that because of the geography of this state and the glamour of San Francisco and Los Angeles, that Fresno does not get its due, nor does the entirety of the Central Valley. So it isn't about feeling you're not good enough, but rather it's feeling like, you know what, we have a lot to offer, and all you do in the rest of the state is take unfair shots at us. Case in point, what happened in 2005 when the Bulldogs go down to the Coliseum to play number one USC, and what does the LA Times do? They run a story about brain drain and the minds, the great young minds leaving the valley. And that's the kind of thing, Jackson, whether it was intentional or not, it'd be an awful big coincidence, I think it wasn't. It's the kind of thing that makes people angry here. And what Sergio brought up when I talk about attendance, and I want to limit this to football because of what I talked about a moment ago, saying, you know what, it's the social media age, and it's something that guys of my generation can't adapt to. And Sergio, your points are valid, but it goes to me beyond that. I have a 22-year-old son, so I know all about social media. Trust me. I also run a new technologies company, so I spend a lot of time immersed in it. The only difference is, because of certain contracts, I stay off of social media because, and I've told my son this a million times, Jackson, growing up, and he's doing great right now as a nuclear engineer in the Navy, and I'm very proud of him. He's in Charleston, South Carolina. But I've told him over and over again, if you want to make sure you're not accused of doing drugs, don't go to a party where they're doing drugs, right? The term never comes up. If you say, I was never there, then you can't get accused of things unjustly. For me, because I have certain contracts, I stay off of social media as a participant because it's my way of protecting clients and other people, and quite honestly, Jackson, myself, because you can't accuse me of saying something unless you've got it in audio, okay, because it just isn't out there, all right? There is no social media that I'm involved with, but I obviously follow it. I'm very much aware of it. So when Sergio talks about the age of social media, Sergio, if you're listening in Reedley, and you're an owner, a business owner, and you have been for a good long while, I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying, Sergio, is the issue about attendance, if we were putting this to a vote, a popular vote, like electing somebody and they had to get 50.1%, I know, and I've known back from the time that I was a student at Fresno State, that you're not going to win an election based upon who is going to show up at games when you're not playing name recognition teams. It is all about ego here. It is all about the chip on the shoulder. And I don't mean that as a negative. It means that if people in this valley don't see a benefit nationally for a Fresno State game, it's tough to get them to come out. That may be exacerbated, Jackson, by social media, but it's been that way for a good long while. My disappointment has been a comment that I've made over and over again, which is, if you want to take that next step, if you want to talk about legacy, you have to get to the point. 6 times a year, that's all you're being asked, and all it takes is a relatively small percentage of your population. You've got 500,000 here, you've got millions within driving distance. What you need to have, the desire 6 times a year to come out to support your club. Remember, Jackson, I've talked about this in regard to Nebraska. People drive 12, 14 hours to watch Big Red. Who they're playing is many times inconsequential. Now, I know this isn't Nebraska, but I also know it shouldn't be that damned hard when you're winning to get that small percentage you need, not the majority of the valley, not a plurality, in all honesty, of different communities. You just need 40,000. And I will ask you, since you are a guy who is thoroughly immersed out of necessity in social media, you are a young guy in your mid-20s. Is it that much different from the time you started watching Fresno State as a kid, Jackson, or is it pretty much the same in mindset about it needs to be the big game, it needs to be the chip on the shoulder to get people to come out here en masse?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's terribly different. I think TV availability, which has made some of the maybe games that weren't the marquee opponents, you know, those games now are on also on TV and they make it more accessible. I think that may play into some of the lesser games on the schedule, but you know, it's really not all that different from my view. I know in 2001 that run the Bulldogs had really sparked something special here in the Central Valley, and that wave felt like kind of rode into maybe 2008 or so. I mean, you look back at some of the attendance numbers in those seasons when the Bulldogs weren't necessarily, you know, one of their highlight seasons of that decade, but there were still, you know, upper 30s at a lot of those games, upper 30,000s. And, you know, now you look back just at the Bulldogs hosting San Jose State this past season, I think they only drew about 27,000 for a time when Fresno State was really rolling and on the cusp of the Mountain West Championship and all that. And you look elsewhere in the country, I think it's more of a cultural and habitual kind of thing. You look at the South and the SEC, they're rolling. Almost all their teams are selling out stadiums. And the other Power 5 programs, for the most part, across the country are still doing very well. And you see the West Coast, it's not quite the same. And I think there's a few fan bases in the Pac-12 that kind of have that top-tier loyalty and the numbers as well. Of course, USC is, you know, up until this past year, where People started having some fits about how things were going. You could always count on them. Oregon and Washington are two pretty proud programs on the West Coast. And, you know, Fresno State's kind of somewhere in between. It's not quite the same atmosphere, I think, you see at some of the other West Coast programs, but it's also not as big either as some of the bigger Power 5, Pac-12 schools. So it's kind of in the middle, and I just think Fresno State, they've got to hit that kind of marquee moment and kind of ride that wave. And this past season, it was at the end. So if they could have done something similarly exciting as beating Boise State for a conference championship and a win over Arizona State and a big-time neutral site, I think that would have carried for quite some time throughout the season, and I think it will into 2019. But it's kind of waiting until that big moment comes that takes the crowd from 33,000 to 40,000. You know, it's something I think's got to just get the thing over the edge. And I feel like Fresno State's really tapped into some of that with their Pride of the Valley campaign they've got going on. And a lot of people have really taken that to heart, and hopefully that will kind of carry momentum into August as well.
Yeah, and Jackson, your points are well taken. And Sergio, I need to tell you, if you are, you know, listening live right now, or you have a chance to hear it on podcast, you're 1,000,000% correct in what you're saying. The point I wanted to make is I don't disagree with you. It's a matter of nuance. I don't expect to win the whole valley over. I expect when you play the way the team has the last couple of years, you should have a reasonable shot at 40,000 plus a game. Although as recently as yesterday, Jackson, I was talking to Andrew, and Andrew has mentioned, and he's also right, that if things don't go well at the Coliseum on August 31, it will impact greatly attendance for Minnesota the next week. Reverse those games, and it wouldn't matter what you did in Minnesota if USC were coming here the following week. It has to do with name recognition. It has to do with, again, I had a partner who's passed away who at one time, I'm not talking about an on-air partner, I'm a business partner, who's since passed away, who told me, you know what, in 2005, he said, here's what I want to do. I want to drop my drawers on the 405, and I want to tell those people around USC, those spoiled brats, you can kiss my big white you-know-what at high noon. Okay. That statement was very much representative of this area, right? And again, it wasn't feeling inferior. Rather, it was feeling as though you're not getting credit. I would never have heard him say, you know what, I'm flying to Minneapolis, I'm dropping my drawers, you know, at the Mall of America, and I'm telling those people there. It is not the same. So obviously, you have to pick your spots. My question to you is, And this is something that, you know, our good friend Harry, you know Harry well, he had said, you know what, the coaches, both sports need to be more active marketing. And my response was, he's right, except you can't change somebody's personality. Pat Hill was the Cal Worthington. Cal Worthington was a used car salesman in Los Angeles. He'd ride in on a Rhino, for God's sake, if he thought it would sell a car, right? Pat grew up in that environment, and I used to kid him that he was the Cal Worthington of college football because Pat would do, he called USC out. I mean, Pete Carroll didn't want to play him. He finally had enough. He wanted to shut Pat up, right? And it damn near cost him big. That is Pat's personality. Jim Sweeney could take over a room. Jim was a guy who could anger the opposition, and he could also circle the wagons with the troops, with the best of them. The personalities are different now. You can't ask somebody to be what they're not. You have two outstanding coaches in Tedford and in Hudson, but neither are going to be ones that are going to stand on a table and start the fight song in the middle of a press conference down south. It just isn't going to happen. And you can't ask that of them. That was a different time and place with those coaches. But my deal, Jackson, is this. How do you in Fresno get to the point, if you've won 22 games in the last 2 years, that people say, I'm going to leave the 70-inch 4K TV behind. I'm going to leave the barbecue and the convenience of home behind. I'm still following Fresno State, but it's just damn convenient. And the cost and the headaches of coming to the stadium to get to the point that people say, I'm going to be there six times a year. It doesn't mean my neighbor has to be there, but there's got to be 40,000 of us that can get there if the team is going to win 22 times in 2 years. How do you get from here to there?
Yeah, I mean, just the way how successful the team has been over the last 2 years, we just haven't quite seen it get back to where it once was and get back to those sellout numbers. And I do feel like it needs to be that kind of name opponent or something to get that over the top and or a run. If the Bulldogs open up with a win, I have to imagine Minnesota's going to be pretty full. And if they can get past that one, there's a really good chance for them to get on a roll going into November. And you get something like that, top 25, that should help. I think it's all about just getting those fans in the stadium for that first time and taking advantage. I think that's what we saw with the basketball program several times, particularly in the Rodney Terry era, where there was that marquee home game or that big chance to get people out. And when it's a loss, you usually don't recapture that excitement until the next one, which can be the next year for, you know, a lot of the cases. So for Fresno State, even though there's been a whole lot of success and there just hasn't quite been maybe that necessarily one game or moment, I would say the biggest moments were basically on the road, the Mountain West Championship game and the Las Vegas Bowl. And a lot of fans went out to the Vegas Bowl, of course, to be there, but you're talking about that chance to cash in on a big momentum swing and get fans in the stadium. It just hasn't quite happened yet. And, you know, for Fresno State, hopefully a win at USC and a home game against Minnesota can maybe be that catalyst that gets that fan that's having that convenience of being at home to actually be one of those fans that put it over the top and get in the stadium and sell it out.
And Jackson, you're right, and Sergio brought it up, and we've talked about it over and over again. Every time they've climbed the mountain, they've taken a step back, right? They've slipped back as far as national prominence. But the question beyond that about whether it is a generational situation or not is one that I'm just not sure of, Jackson, because to me it does seem to be same-o. And we talk about legacy, and I talked about the trip to Auburn in Sweeney's last year in 96, and I know it's a different world there, and you are correct in saying that throughout the Southeast, you know, we talk about it, football's not a religion. It's much more important than that to some people, right? I mean, that's a joke. But it's like the first time that I had gone to Oklahoma City for the College Softball World Series in 1990, which, you know, it was the first time because at that point was not a pro venue, you know, so I hadn't gone there to call games. And we turn on the radio, and, we're talking about May, you know, we're talking about, you know, Memorial Day weekend, and the topic of conversation, people didn't even know that the softball caller, they've since grown greatly, but at the point, I asked a cabbie to take me to Hall of Fame Stadium, and he took me to the home of the Oklahoma 89ers, okay? We pull up to a chain-link fence because they were on the road, and I said, I don't think this is where they're contesting a national championship. And he turns off the meter, and he goes, well, then we got a problem, don't we? Which was a nice way of saying, I'm turning off this meter, and we're going to make a financial deal, because I said, we need to go by Remington Park, which I should have learned that's the horse racing places adjacent to it, right? That was all the way across. So it was like, you know what, you're going to pay me money, we're going to turn off the meter, otherwise you're not going anywhere. You might as well sit here and wait for the 8 or 9ers to come home, right? Okay. On the radio, all it was there, Jackson, the DMZ between Stillwater and Norman. That's what Oklahoma City is, state capital, biggest city. But all it was, okay, we're discussing 7-deep linebackers for the Sooners. That's what was going on in May, okay? You tell me, and the Telos, the 10 lines were full. You tell me that happens in any other places than football crazy like that, right? You can't expect that here, can you?
No, I mean, we do that a little bit on the Barkboard Insider Board, and there's a select group of fans that are up for that, and we're very grateful that we have them and have a place to kind of discuss those things. But, yeah, I think the general fan is probably not all that tuned in to the second team and the walk-ons that are coming in, which we seem to be finding more and more each day.
Particularly in May. Which then, look, yeah. Final question about this. We'll continue to discuss. We have for years. And, Sergio, I do very much appreciate your email. The reality of it, Jackson, what then, in your opinion, outside of conference affiliation, which I've said it, I just said it the other day again, conference affiliation for football solves everything. If you get to a Power 5 conference, you have the money and the mandatory home-and-home schedule that means people have to come here and play you. But we don't have that right now. Will the mere passage of time and continuing to win, because even Boise State, for all their winning, they haven't been drawing great, will just the passage of time build legacy, Jackson, Or is it going to take that kind of break where you find yourself at a pure serendipity in a better conference as far as national recognition and your schedule and your money?
Well, yeah, I think Boise State's a good example. I think Fresno State has a really good opportunity to go on a similar type run as the Broncos did in the WAC in the Mountain West, where they were basically dominating. Fresno State's got a little more competition with Boise State now as a key competitor, and you've got Utah State and San Diego State and the like, typically at the top end of the conference right now. But, even the Broncos, you don't see that tradition and that passion and those sellout crowds unless they go to that Fiesta Bowl and get that win. And that's what I'm talking about when I say that marquee kind of moment or the big thing that, puts Fresno State over the top. Despite 22 wins, it doesn't quite compare to that Fiesta Bowl moment that we're still talking about where the Broncos beat Oklahoma, and not to mention they went back two more times after that. And Fresno State, if they keep putting these types of seasons together, that opportunity will come. But really with Coach Tedford and his staff, I have a hard time not seeing Fresno State continue to be the successful. I think they're head and shoulders better prepared than especially the West Division, and just about everyone except Boise State is basically even, which we've seen over 16 quarters of football in the last two seasons. So I think you just have to have the stars aligned for that one big season or that one big game that you kind of put you over the top and you ride that wave as long as you can. Because even Boise State having very good seasons like Fresno State is right now, it's not quite the same as it was just a few years back when they were having those types of BCS or New Year's Bowl games in their schedules.
It's a tough gig for mid-majors, I will tell you, my friend. I appreciate the time. We'll continue the visit throughout the summer. That it is frustrating to me because the one thing that is within your control as a fan base is the numbers that show up for the games, that you cannot control when the games are going to be played or your national coverage, but you can control with the desire to get out there, your home field advantage, and an impressive crowd. I know there are many other gravitational pulls, finances, big screen TVs, relatives, all that stuff. I just hope we get over the hump at some point. It's just been a long, long time in coming. All right, Jackson, last thing for you here. Wyant, any updates at all here? What's going on there?
Yeah, interesting case. The Bulldogs still have a few roster spots open, and he's a guy that we really didn't know much about. He wasn't even on 24/7 Sports with a profile, which just about everyone that's got a shot seems to be. He was most recently committed to Toledo via Twitter, but we've been trying to dig into it and have a little more clarity on our insider board. But someone that Fresno State has been really trying to maybe sway here before the last couple of weeks of summer. It's a situation where players at this time of year have basically missed the window to sign. And even if you commit somewhere, you're kind of still up for grabs for other schools. At Fresno State, I've seen similar cases where they've tried to blue shirt players out of necessity where they've run out of scholarships essentially for that year signing class and they're able to get more players in, but you don't have that binding agreement. And they've seen players that were committed to them go elsewhere because of that. At the end of things, a tight end got swooped up by TCU, and it looks like they might be on the better end of that two-sided coin of this guy, Wyatt.
We'll see what happens. Hope people check out the board, barkboard.com. Also get the insider sub. We'll get to the season before you know it. Jackson, I appreciate it. All I can tell you, since you brought up that Fiesta Bowl, Johnson knew how to propose, and evidently McMarion has also figured out a great way to propose. So maybe that augurs well for Fresno State, though Marcus doesn't have any eligibility left. But congratulations to he and his fiance. And all the folks in Dinuba are very happy, and I know you still, though you're not working there, you still hang out in Dinuba all the time, don't you? Just say yes.
I go every once in a while. I'm at Kingsburg right now, so I'm a.
You're moving. You're matriculating the ball down the field, Leonard. So you're doing very nicely. All right, Jax, appreciate it, my friend. Talk to you next week. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys. Jackson Moore, barkboard.com. Take a break. Come back with CG. Attempt to chip into the mountain of emails, and we're not going to get far today, but we'll give it a shot on 50,000 watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back to 32 here until 3 o'clock. CG will take over, bring you to 6. Giants and the Padres, 6:05 pre. 6:45 first pitch from Oracle. Still hard to say that. Oracle Park. It'll be the last night, evidently, of Oracle Arena tomorrow, so there won't be that competition. Larry Ellison won't be spending money in both places. And hopefully the Giants start winning more games. They won last night. This is a two-game series. They'll wrap it up and get ready for Milwaukee, a very good team over the weekend before the Giants head back on the road. Speaking of the road, the A's leaving Tampa St. Pete now. I would assume that they are probably getting ready to board the plane, although I don't know for sure. They did win 6-2 in an early morning getaway game that was on Major League Baseball Network. I'm sure they were thrilled with the demographics of the A's retirement communities in Tampa St. Pete. Sorry, it's a long season, ladies and gentlemen. And for us Warriors tomorrow, because the Giants have the day off, the Warriors will be on 9:40. The Raptors will be there, too, for Game 6, the final one at the arena. All right, chance to talk to our good friend, the aforementioned Christopher Gabriel. Before he comes up, he's in the bullpen right now, warming up for his start. We'll go over email. CG, how you doing?
Doing well. The fastball doesn't seem as fast. The breaking ball is working just fine. I'm going to have some problems with the middle of the order.
Yeah. Oh, you're Madison Bumgarner.
Pretty much. Okay. We'll get the ball out of the ocean now.
That was, you know what, the two things, they're saying that the Achilles surgery that KD had earlier today will not dissuade a lot of teams from offering him the max, even though he's going to have to sit out next year probably. Same with Bumgarner, not about injury, but about attitude, one-loss record. Trust me, there are going to be a number of suitors ready to make a deal with the Giants if that does occur at the end of this month. There's no, and they're not going to be balking at paying him big money either, right? Because Madison has proven it when it counts. Durant proved it in June. Madison proved it in October. And those two sports, that's what matters, right?
No, absolutely. There's no question about it. I would, if I needed a Madison Bumgarner, if I needed an arm like his, and a guy that can come up big in on the biggest stage in the biggest moment, I'm definitely looking at him. No question.
The other thing is, Max Muncy's a pretty tough guy, but there is nobody in Major League Baseball that particularly wants to throw down against Paul Bunyan, because Bumgarner is, if you've ever, we saw him in person in front, the man is enormous, okay? I mean, they say 6'5", 250. That's leaning against the wall. That's my opinion. He's not fat either. He's just he's a big dude, that's for sure.
My feeling about this, Mike Oz wrote a really good piece that's up today, and I completely agree with him, and I've never changed my view on this. Look, if Max Muncy wants to stand there, admire the ball as it goes over the wall, and then decide to move and maybe flip the bat as if he's launching a rocket from NASA. And then if Madison Bumgarner wants to lose his mind to get upset, I don't have any problem with either. The whole let the kids play, let it go both ways. I think there's too many oversensitive ball players. You can't do this. Well, you know what? You can't do this. Let them play. We see emotion in every sport. I do think that, you know, and there's I think it's sports specific, because I'm going to talk at the beginning of my program today about the women's national team from yesterday. But I think with baseball, this whole nonsense of baseball purists and why you flip the bat and it flipped three times, and you know, so the way to get somebody back is to throw at their head or to intentionally hit them with a 95 mile an hour heater. I think it's ridiculous.
No, I agree with you completely. First of all, it's the Giants and Dodgers, and the kids are 29 and 28 years old.
Right.
I'm amused by that.
Right.
But let's keep in mind, the Giants and Dodgers, Matt Williams, about Oral Hershiser. They ended up, of course, with Oral being a Giant, which was kind of like Marichal being a Dodger. But, when Matt was angry back in the 93, when next pitch, line drive right at him. that was just great. And that's what made it fun. And maybe it isn't as much fun as it. Maybe that's why people aren't gravitating toward baseball. We don't have enough of the WWE back in the sport, right?
And for our listeners, and I'm just curious, and I'm not sure if any of you knew this. You probably did. What was Oral Hershiser? What sport did he really want to play when he was growing up?
He wanted to play hockey.
He was a member of the Little Flyers. He was a member. Yep. He was a really talented player, and that was the sport that he wanted to play. But he got talked out of it because his talent in pitching was a little bit more than hockey. But he had considerable talent as a hockey player.
You're right. That's good. He's a punk.
Yeah, well, there you go. He wouldn't have been an enforcer. That's for sure.
Yeah, Well, you know, it's still it, when the Giants and Dodgers are both good at the same time, it's a lot of fun.
It's fantastic.
Right now,
yes.
Right now, not so much. The Dodgers are outstanding, though. They're ready for a 32nd October disappointment in succession. That's just an editorial comment from a purely objective source here. And the Giants are ready to win 70 games if they're lucky. You know what? Speaking of Bay Area teams, I'm going to ask you about Rod's comment. He said the Raiders on Hard Knocks. I might say a bad idea, genes. Remember the SNL deal?
Yes.
Bad idea. Very bad idea. I have to say this, CG. Come on, Rod. A team with Gruden as a coach and Burfict there and Incognito there and Antonio there. A bad idea. I think HBO begs to differ. What do you think?
I'm right there with you, and you just mentioned the names. I mean, with Burfict and with Incognito and with Antonio Brown, John Gruden, and then the it's not a controversy, but what's going to happen going forward with the relationship of John Gruden and Derek Carr. Derek Carr has said to me on this right. program that we have a great relationship and so on. Listen, Hard Knocks, the folks that produce Hard Knocks, they're not idiots. They're pulling the curtain. They want us to see what's going on, but they want something resembling the CBS show Survivor. They want to see alliances. They want to see who's getting voted off the island. They want to see all kinds of chaos, and there really is no better team right now going into this year. It's not the Redskins, it's not the Giants, it's none of them, the 49ers, it's the Raiders, especially when you add the other caveat or the other part of this, which is the fact that they are going to Las Vegas. It's the last year. I just think that what we're going to see could be it could either be a big dud or it could be tremendous, and I think it's more the latter.
Well, look, and I agree, but what I know Rod is talking about, you're well aware of it, bad for the Raiders, okay?
Oh,
I mean,
of course.
It's going to be great for HBO.
But I disagree with Rod in that way.
It can either be very good or very bad, as you just referenced. Is it going to open up those fissures into gaping wide chasms, or is it going to bring this team closer together? My experience has been the more cameras, the less likely it's going to bring the team together. That's my hunch.
I agree to that extent, but I certainly know what Rod's getting at, but I think, you know what, in this case, whether it's chaos or whether it's a little bit more placid, the Raiders could use a little publicity one way or the other, and I think, I mean, there's a lot of folks that have looked at the Raiders from a distance and have their own ideas. I'm neither a Raiders fan nor detractor, but I think it's a good thing, especially as they get ready to go to Las Vegas. Gruden, people will get a better idea of who the heck John Gruden is besides his little quarterback camp that he did forever and his work on Monday Night Football. I think it's going to be a positive, and if we see nonsense develop, well, we're going to be more intrigued to watch them this year. So I think the Raiders win either way.
I hope you're right about that as a Raider fan. The other thing is, the big question is the commercials, the voicers. Is it Gruden or is it Frank Caliendo? That's the big issue.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah. Just, either way, Gruden's getting his cut. You know, it's kind of like stealing the riff for Stairway to Heaven. You're going to get paid. So either way, Gruden's going to get paid. Or you can't go out and impersonate him if it's not him. And Caliendo has had it nailed for a good long time. And John gets a kick out of it, but I guess if I had a $100 million guaranteed contract, I'd be whistling, as Clark Griswold once said, zippity-doo-dah, out of you-know-where, CG.
Yeah, that's it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Before I crashed a safari wagon in some Motel 6 parking lot, which has happened a couple of times. All right, about tonight, who do you have, Blues or Bruins? Sergio who sent the fine email in, our good friend in Reedley, but another Sergio who actually started as Serge and then emailed me back and said, I don't want you to think I'm Serge Savard. I didn't think you were, Sergio. Who do you have tonight? Because I know the people around me, who they want, provided they stay sober.
Well, I'm going...
Too late, incidentally. Okay, 5:42, too late.
Well, you know, you never want to. We try to get people in this building to stop drinking before noon. So,
oh, jeez.
You know,
Perrier water is what CG's talking about.
I kid because I care. I'm going with the Bruins
you
tonight.
You still have to leave, you know.
That's
just
well,
that
you know,
okay.
The fastball has nothing on it today. I'm going with the Bruins tonight. And I thought ESPN put up a really good piece. I knew some of these numbers. I didn't know all of them. Our friend Greg Wyshynski, who comes on the program all the time. Bruins are 6-1. all time with a chance to clinch the Stanley Cup. The numbers for the Blues are not very good at all. The Blues are the sixth team in Stanley Cup final history to lose Game 6 at home after leading 3-2. And of those six, only one came back to win the Cup. That was the 1945 Toronto Maple Leafs. The counter to that, Tony, is that the Blues have been great on the road in the playoffs this year. They're 9-3, so they're not going to be intimidated. TD Garden is not the kind of intimidating environment that a place like the Shark Tank can be. Blues, I certainly conquered that. St. Louis is a great home environment. It'll be nuts in that place tonight, but I can't get past the fact that I thought the window for St. Louis was to win Game 6 in St. Yeah. Louis. If they get a lead, though, we always talk about the importance of first goals, and we also talk about how often the dreaded two-goal lead in hockey goes away. But I got to believe, if the Blues can get a lead, there will be tremendous pressure on Boston because they're home, they have more distractions. They have the distractions that St. Louis had in Game 6, and I think the best chance is to get that first goal tonight. Because if it starts to go into the second period and the Blues still have a lead, you're going to see the Bruins pressing just a little bit, and that will work in the Blues' favor. But all that being said, I'm going with the Bruins tonight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm pulling for the Blues. I think the Bruins will win. Also, what you're referencing, and you and I have talked about it before, the Old Garden, the world's largest outhouse this time of year.
Yeah.
That's not an exaggeration. The 80 by 180 ice surface made it a whole different deal. That is not the case at TD right now. And I think the Bruins will have enough, but you're right. If the Blues jump on top, it could get interesting. The fans, not terribly patient. Also, we had the email. We haven't addressed it. If Boston goes ahead and wins, that means three of the four major sports titles at this moment would all sit in that Boston Foxborough area.
Yeah.
How does that sit with you?
It doesn't.
Just curious.
Yeah. You know what? It doesn't matter to me one way or the other, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know. I guess I'm not understanding people, and I mean this figuratively, losing sleep over it. I mean, it's a big who cares. Sports goes in cycles. You know, the Bulls had their time. The Lakers and Celtics have had their time several times. The Yankees have had their time. UConn in women's basketball, certainly Alabama right now. Boston has had a good hold on pro sports for a while now, whether they were winning or losing. We've watched a lot of the teams there. And I think for me as a fan, on the fan hat, when I put that on, I enjoy when a team or teams in a particular market start to do exceptionally well and maybe win championships, because it rallies everybody to hate on them a little bit more, and it gives more reason to watch and to watch teams that are going to maybe knock them off. But as far as them, I like Boston as a city. I have family there. I'm not a fan of any of their teams, but really, Tony, it doesn't bother me at all.
I will tell you this. We were just talking about trying to get the Valley en masse, or at least a segment, 40,000 of them to be specific, to show up six times a year. And I mentioned the email that Sergio had sent in. That was an outstanding one. And we'll continue to discuss it. We have, as you and I have talked about, it's been going on for years, the debate about what you do to try to get more people out. But in Boston, you can love the city or dislike it or what. And there are some things about the city, you know, in the past that are not highly complimentary,
right,
about,
right,
being open-minded. And I'm not going to, it may be impacting Anthony Davis's decision right now, incidentally, beyond the Isaiah Thomas deal, not the Isaiah Thomas to Detroit, the Isaiah Thomas,
sure,
from the state of Washington, who, you know, they felt rushed him back on the court. Has a familiar sound, doesn't it?
Mm.
But there are things about Boston that haven't been terribly kind to certain groups. But as far as sports, everywhere else, including New York, your sports station is not going to be your top-rated station. In Boston, they pull about a six share. When they say they love sports, CG, they are not kidding, okay? They,
yeah,
really, really love sports. You tune in Sports Talk Radio, they're talking about Big Poppy right now. They're talking about, can the Red Sox turn it back on? They are talking about, you know, the OTAs and camp, and can Brady continue to play into his 70s? They're talking about what goes on with the Celtics and can they make the deal. Definitely the Bruins are front and center. It is a sports haven for those that are really immersed in sport. And, you know, you have to look at it with a degree of envy if you are a sports fan, and particularly sports journalists. You have to look at it with a degree of envy, right?
You do. The only other city, as great a sports towns as we could look around the country, cities like Chicago, San Francisco is a great sports town. They don't get as much acclaim. Los Angeles is. The only other city that rivals Boston in that way is Philadelphia. The sports.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah,
and also very hard on their team.
Yeah,
I might add, so.
The sports stations in Philadelphia are just. I mean, they're nonstop. They're highly rated. I mean, in Philly, the team that dominates the discussion there 365 days a year, or 364, the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles have always owned that town. It's not even close, but everybody has an opinion. And as you were saying, people are usually angry. And if they don't have anything to be angry about, they'll make something up to be angry. But, yeah, you'll hear that all day long. And when you look at ratings out there, I mean, it's crazy. And I mean, the only thing crazier than the callers are the hosts. I don't know how they must have blood pressure monitors in the studio with these guys.
Yeah, it's like a whole group of Steve Ballmers there. They're all ready to be gurneyed out, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Steve will be fine. He looks like he's ready to have major physical issues, but he's got billions to see him through. Terrific guy.
Yeah, he looked like Bob the Tomato from VeggieTales when he was in Oracle Arena.
Yes, that's right. One more big comeback, and it was not going to be good for him. All right, speaking of Oracle Arena, I want to ask you, Brian had sent this email in, and then Gino a little earlier today also asked, I'm going to ask you, right now, Brian's email said, so cut to the chase, who's to blame for KD's Achilles injury? He had his Achilles surgery with a ruptured Achilles earlier today in New York. He said, who is to blame, in Brian's opinion, and where then will he ultimately end up playing whenever he does return? CG, to take the first part of this thing, we know it was a collaborative effort. Steve Kerr came out today and said, if we had any idea, we were told all he could do at worst was re-injure the calf. We were shocked about this. Knowing what we knew then, if we had a chance, we'd do it all over again. The implication has been there, my friend, that Kevin Durant's doctors were in agreement, and that Kevin wanted to play desperately, but he's been oddly silent about that. And I know the Warriors would like him to come out and say, it was my idea also. What do you make of this?
Well, I'm just not going to attach blame to anybody, because I've said this on the program, my program, and I'll say it again, Tony, that I simply don't believe, and unless I hear otherwise, I don't believe that a player who is arguably the greatest player in the world, easily one of the two or three, along with LeBron and Kawhi, best players in the world, a medical team of orthopedic surgeons, of trainers, you have the front office, you have Bob Myers, you have Steve Kerr, you have everybody involved here, and I do believe it was a group decision, but I do believe ultimately it came down to Kevin Durant. I don't believe that they would put him out there for one game or one series, even though it is the NBA championship, doing something that's going to potentially hurt or end his career. And there's really, the way this was set up, it was a no-win situation. Look at Kawhi last year. Last year, he got cleared to play. He decided not to play, and he got crushed by media, by other players. So the Warriors and Kevin Durant, in a no-win situation, and I wrote this on Twitter, and I don't want to take too much time here, but you can't have it both ways. You can't have the one group saying, what's wrong with him? He needs to get out there and play. And then he gets out there and shows the heart and plays. He gets injured worse, and then people saying, well, who's to blame? Why was he out there playing? It can't be both ways. If you really desperately want to attach blame to somebody, then you'd have to say it was Kevin. But I don't think that he would go out there unless he felt that he could have done it.
Yeah, and I agree completely. This was something where the consensus was that at worst he could restrain the calf muscle. About the external or internal pressure, only Kevin knows for sure the impact. But I will tell you this. If what we were hearing was true, that if the Warriors lose this series, he was going to stay, then there would have been no motivation for the Warriors to push him out there.
Yeah.
If that happened to be true, because in reality, behind the scenes, the fan base may have wanted the three-peat. the team, if you were to force them with truth serum to respond, would say, you know what, from Joe Lacob on down, we'll trade this title for a healthy Kevin Durant for 5 years coming up, okay? So because of that, I don't think the Warriors would push if that happened to be true. Only Kevin knows exactly what the motivation was. All I know is it's a terrible shame, and CG, as I let you go, and we're talking in Friday, all I can tell you is, hopefully, as opposed to Boogie Cousins, who's really struggling coming back, 357 days, and he still is struggling, the body type of Kevin Durant may help him a great deal. May help him a great deal, because he does have the right body type as opposed to a big lumbering guy like Cousins. I hope that helps him.
Yeah, me too. And I'll real quickly, the second part of Brian's question, I have now completely switched because of this injury. I actually believe that he will stay with Golden State.
Like, he can either do it by taking the $31 million
yep.
and rehabbing, or the Warriors will re him up for probably about $40 million.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens. Going to be a fascinating June,
yes,
that's
is.
For sure. CG, appreciate it, my friend. Have a great one. I'll talk to you on Friday.
Thanks, Tony.
We'll see you. All right, take a break. Get you ready for CG after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.